This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
Let's hit it. Give me a vacation.
Vacation.
Give me a wave.
Surfing.
Give me a city tour.
The trolley.
Give me animals.
The zoo.
Give me some sea life. Give me museums.
Balboa Park.
Give me a woo.
Roller coaster.
What's that spell?
San Diego.
If you're happy and you know it, San Diego is the place to show it. Book your family vacation at sandiego.org. Funded in part with the City of San Diego Tourism Marketing District Assessment Funds.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Hello and welcome to Savor, a production of iHeartRadio. I'm Annie Reese.
And I'm Lauren Vogelbaum. And today we have an episode for you about churros.
Yes. Oh, this episode. It's a really good one. Lauren warned me.
Sorry. I'm sorry, dude. Yep.
It gave me tension, I will say.
It's one of those ones where the history is difficult to unravel.
It is, but I do like how many people were writing about it. If I, you know, maybe our Savor special should just be, our anniversary special should just be behind the scenes complaining. if I had to, like, put into categories, there are certain types of topics that do give me headaches or pain. Again, never don't want to use that to not talk about a thing. But one is I can't find anything on it. Two is I can find a lot of stuff on it, but none of it matches. Three, I can find stuff on it, but it's so big and so intense in terms of who people's theories and what they believe. And, you know, if you're talking about a fried dough, you're talking about a huge history. Those would be my big three categories of
stressful.
Yes. But again, never want to use that not to talk about a thing. And I actually really enjoyed doing this research, as painful as it was at some points, because it kind of felt like I, at the end, I'd solved a puzzle piece in my head. Like, not the whole piece of churros in the history of time, but I had in my head. I was like, okay, I get this. I get this.
Yeah. Right. Well, I'm glad that you found some churros closure.
I did. It actually reminded me of a very profound experience I had when I was a kid, where I had this math problem that I couldn't solve, and I was determined to solve it, and I was filled with anger at the day of tears. I was outraged, but then I solved it, and I was like, I'm glad I put the work in to do it. You know, again, I have not really solved anything with churros, but I feel like I was able to piece together something.
Yeah.
Was there any particular reason this was on your mind?
Was there? Oh, I have no idea. Nope.
Okay.
All right. I was doing the thing where I was like, oh, well, we haven't talked about something from Central to South America for a minute. And we haven't talked about, like, a bread product for a minute. So what are some things we could talk about? And I was like, oh, churros is a mess. Let's go there.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. I love a good churro.
Oh, yeah.
But I'm just not a dessert person regularly, but I do love a good churro. But I have so many friends where this is their thing.
Oh,
this
sure.
is their thing. Friend of the show, friend of us in real life, Samantha from Stuff Mom Never Told You, my co-host over there. She and I went on a journey to Universal, the theme park in Los Angeles. Yeah, it's in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
Disney's in Anaheim, which is why I got confused. Anyway, she hates haunted houses, which is why I was there and why she came.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
she was like, I will come if we get churros. And I know
That's
this
so
is a hot
specific.
Button issue.
I love that.
Yes. Yes. And we got, that was the first thing we did when we got in there.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I know this is a hot button issue and we will return to it. I also have a friend who regularly will just be like, let's go to Taco Bell. And he gets the churros there.
Huh.
Also a hot button issue.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah.
But that's his thing. That's his thing. He loves them. He's always asking where he can get churros. Everywhere we go, churros.
I mean, fried dough is great.
Yes. Easy to move around with as well. Mm-hmm. That's great.
Yeah, yeah.
You can see our episodes on donuts, hot chocolate, any other dough-based items, surprisingly, maybe even tamales.
Sure, yeah. Science-wise, like injera, gnocchi, bagels, French fries.
Yeah. Perhaps you're already seeing the issue, listeners, of why this was a hard one.
So good.
I guess this brings us to our question.
Mm-hmm.
Churros. What are they?
Well, churros can be a number of slightly different things, but you're basically looking at a skinnyish stick or loop or bite of a light, crispy, chewy fried dough. Maybe a little thicker than your thumb, depending on your thumb, you know, often ridged long ways on the exterior. And those ridges are because a churro is made by piping a moist dough through a star-shaped tip into hot oil. In many traditions, the dough is relatively plain, and they're sweetened a little bit with like a dusting of crunchy crystallized sugar or maybe cool powdered sugar, maybe a little bit of cinnamon in there, and served still hot as a snack or breakfast item, often alongside hot coffee or chocolate. But they can also be filled or dipped in any number of sweet or even savory sauces and have become a popular street food. Recipes can vary, and people enjoy arguing about them, but man, they're a heckin' donut, y'all. It's a very airy, warm donut with a very satisfying texture, that little crunch and then sort of like a melting kind of chew. It's like a psychological cross between a waffle and a French fry. A churro is just one of the simple pleasures of being an earthling. Like, sometimes you get to eat fried dough.
That's a good time.
Yeah. It doesn't make up for everything, but, you know, it's pretty nice. It's a pretty good perk.
Right.
All right. Pastries, like churros, are kind of like poems because you're dealing with very few ingredients. So the way that you handle them really counts, okay? Because at its most direct, a churro is just flour and water, maybe a pinch of salt or sugar in there. The alchemy that turns that from that into something so delicious is the cooking process, which is a two-step process. First, you bring water just to a boil, and then you add an equal amount of flour and stir it in with vigor until it forms a dough. What this is doing is hydrating the flour through gelatinization, taking the starches in the flour from being like stiff and gritty to nice and puffy and chewy. And this happens to some starch molecules when you apply heat and water. Okay, so some starch molecules tend to form these tight chains. And when you apply heat, the bonds between those molecules start to weaken. And if you've also introduced water molecules into the mix, the starches will glom on to those water molecules so that the whole matrix of starch swells up and then sort of sets into this new puffy form. In the case of churros, it's a loose enough form that you'll be able to kind of scoop it into either a pastry bag or a device called a churrera, which is sort of like a large syringe, except instead of a tube with a needle nose at the end, it has a pastry nozzle that you push the batter through with a plunger. If you've never seen a pastry nozzle, it's just a piece of plastic or metal with a shape cut into it so that if you push stuff through it, like frosting or dough, it'll have that shape, like Play-Doh, but more edible. Yeah. For churros, the shape is traditionally a six-pointed star to give you those long ridges. You can pipe your dough out onto a floured surface to wait or directly into hot oil. And deep frying is a cool process, not literally, sorry, because you've got this tremendous heat at the surface of the object that you're frying from more or less direct contact with the hot oil. But that oil isn't penetrating very far into the object, especially not when the surface has these like semi-firm links of gelatinized starch. And also when steam is escaping, as the water inside the object heats up and evaporates, it creates a sort of protective barrier around the object. You can also see our fried chicken episode. Anyway, it's going to create this like crunchy crust at the surface, which will turn golden brown and tasty thanks to the Maillard reaction. But then the interior is going to steam cook, puffing up as the water molecules in the dough evaporate out and leave tiny pockets of air where they used to be in that gelatinized matrix. And the shape of churros matters here, beyond just being pretty. Because that star shape gives the dough a lot of surface area to interact with the fry oil, and thus a lot of places for the steam to escape. If not enough steam escapes from a cooking churro, the pressure can build up inside of it, and it can explode, either in the oil or after you pull it out. There are accounts of this online. Deep frying is terrifying, folks. Here we are.
See our video we posted on us trying to fry chicken. Oh no. I think we both screamed at one point.
I think we did.
Yeah, we're not really a cooking show.
Yeah, that's why when we say we're not a cooking show, this is what we mean.
Nope.
Oh, heck. Okay. Anyway, churros should be ready in just a few minutes in the oil. If you have your oil temperature and your cooking time right, the dough won't actually soak up that much of the oil by the time it's cooked through. So they don't tend to be that greasy. But that's just like the most basic format of a churro. Some recipes call for a more complex dough involving oil or melted butter, and or egg, and or a chemical leavener like baking powder. I've seen corn flour in the mix. I've seen like a decent bit of sugar used in there or other flavorings like vanilla. It all depends on what you're looking for in your finished churro. Oil or butter will make the dough a little richer and softer. Egg or baking powder are leavening agents that help create like a lighter puff to the dough. Egg and butter both provide flavor and protein for the Maillard reaction. Sugar provides flavor and can add some crunch and caramelization to the outer crust. Typically, what you're looking to do is keep your proportion of liquids to flour about equal.
So if you add eggs or fats or sugar, you'll probably want to subtract some water. But the internet has a lot of recipes and advice, including how to not make your churros explode. So yeah, yeah. But yeah, your finished churro can be anywhere from very like direct and crispy chewy to a little bit creamy and custardy in the center to downright bready with a crunchy crust. You can also pipe them full of whatever filling you'd like while they're still hot and malleable. In different places, you might find churros filled with or alongside a dip of a dulce de leche or chocolate or cream or cajeta or fruit jam. But the possibilities are endless. I don't know, matcha churros with prickly pear jelly. There are mass-produced versions that have, I don't know, bits of Oreo cookie pieces, and they're filled with Oreo cream. That sounds horrifying. you can mix your cinnamon sugar with chili powder for a spicy kick. You can make savory churros dusted with a spice blend and served with queso. I don't know.
okay.
Yeah. Humans, we get up to things. In Spain and Mexico and other places where they're very popular, you can find carts or stalls and even permanent cafes called churrerias that specialize in making them, often serving them with hot chocolate or coffee, or just in like a paper bag or cone as a go-to snack at festivals. Also, as with many popular desserts, or desserts that have like grown global popularity, churro is a flavor now. You can buy churro flavored oils from food service companies that recommend using things like churro flavored dry rub or macaroni and cheese. I don't think I want
on your
that.
Body?
No. as a food product.
Oh.
Like creating a recipe.
Oh, I see. With.
I like where you were going though.
It's like, what are we doing here?
I mean, like I said, people get up to things, but
why are we trying to make ourselves more edible?
There's a proud history of Bath and Body Works era stuff of like all kinds of dessert flavored. They don't usually taste good though, which is probably a good thing.
A proud history indeed. Well. I guess speaking of, what about the nutrition?
I like the number of times that cannibalism comes up in our what about the nutrition section. I feel like that really, really says something about us. And y'all, you're still listening. it depends on how you make your churros, perhaps, obviously. But like donuts are a treat. Treats are nice. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. Yes, indeed. Well, we do have some numbers for you.
Yes. At one famous chocolateria, that is like a chocolate cafe in Madrid, called San Ginés, they go through some 80,000 churros every 24 hours.
Wow. Wow.
Hoofda. Yeah. Yep. there's a couple numbers in here, but this tickled me because it kind of demonstrates the way that churros have become like part of the zeitgeist. So like, okay, there's a snack producer for mostly the restaurant industry called J&J Snack Foods. They launched churros.com, the website, circa 2019. And at that time, they reported a 125% increase of the appearance of churros on dessert menus in the United States over the past decade. And they furthermore reported that 44% of Americans polled said that they love churros. Whoa, 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 whoa. It was in all caps. I'm not sure how else to get that across.
Right.
On audio.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. One of the things in one of their press releases said, and for health-conscious consumers, J&J's Tio Pepe's 51% whole grain churros are perfect, and they're designed to specially meet school lunch requirements. Great for kids.
Hmm. The mind of a food podcaster is immediately like, now I want to talk about these school lunch requirements.
Oh, absolutely. I feel like it probably has to do with like peanut safe, like another allergen.
I got you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Although I haven't, school lunches is a broad topic that we've had on our list for heckin' ever. A lot of interesting things going on in various places around the world with that.
Ooh, yes. Listeners, write in. School lunches in other countries.
Oh, yeah, yeah. If you grew up, if you have a kid who's school age, either here or wherever, school lunches are fascinating to me.
Yes. I can certainly say in my school, churros were never an offering. I wish that they had been.
Your parents also weren't giving you churros to take to school.
No. Okay. I would eat like an apple and a piece of buffalo chicken. I was a strange child.
can't imagine.
Yeah. Of course not. Of course not. Well, the history of the churro is quite strange itself.
It is. It is. And we are going to get into that as soon as we get back from a quick break for a word from our sponsors. This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robey,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
Thank you for taking the light, and you're going to shine it all over the world, and it makes me really happy.
I never imagined that I would get the chance to carry this honor and help be a part of this legacy.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
I never thought I'd take my three young kids to Sicily to solve a century-old mystery, but that's what I'm doing in my new podcast, The Sicilian Inheritance. Join us as we travel thousands of miles on the beautiful and crazy island of Sicily, as I trace my roots back through a mystery for the ages and untangle clues within my family's origin story, which has morphed like a game of telephone through the generations. Was our family matriarch killed in a land deal gone wrong? Or was it by the Sicilian Mafia? A lover's quarrel? Or was she, as my father believed, a witch? Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
Okay, so again, fried dough in itself is old.
Uh-huh.
It's old. This episode, I tried my best. The timeline is a bit twisty-turny, but we're gonna get through it. We're gonna get through it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You got this.
Yes. Thank you.
Yeah. And
as always, listeners, if you have any thoughts, resources, recipes, not really related to history, but hey, could be. Mm-hmm. Often are. Please let us know. But okay. As with many of the popular food items that we talk about on the show, people like to fight or even just speculate about the origins and the ownership. Churros, mm-hmm. not different. Mm-hmm. And it really depends on how you define a churro. For instance, some like to trace the churro back to the Apicius out of ancient Rome, circa 1st century CE, which contained a recipe for essentially a water and flour fritter. Others point to similar recipes from ancient Greece that were older, while some suggest that they originated in the Mediterranean basin, where fritters like this have been around even earlier than all of that.
Mm-hmm.
Others still point to the youtiao, a fried breakfast pastry from China, which records indicate was invented in the 12th century, though it likely evolved from fritters that existed earlier than that. That's part of the problem. The theory goes that Portuguese sailors were introduced to these Chinese donuts in the 16th century and brought them back to Europe, where they evolved into the churro. Although some people say where they like lied and said, we created this and this is the churro. So a part of the reason people think this is that Spain's pura, which is sort of a bigger churro.
Kind of bigger, puffier. Yeah.
Yeah, it's puffier. That's a better word. Is very, very similar to the youtiao. Before you yell at me, though, while some do suggest the churro evolved from the youtiao, this is just the theory. Like, some argue that it might be more of a case that similar fried dough preparations developed separately in different places. It is one of those things that just makes sense. So it stands to reason people all over the world were just like, hey, let's put this in oil, fried up.
Yeah, we have water, we have flour, we have oil. I mean, who amongst us has not tried to fry anything once you get a pan of oil hot?
I mean, you and I are afraid of it, but for those less afraid, yes. So to that end, to that kind of theoretical idea, some credit shepherds in Spain with creating churros as an easy, filling, transportable food that they could take with them, possibly while herding churra sheep, hence the name. However, I couldn't find any hard proof of this, and it seems like I'm not alone in that. Some have suggested that essentially this is sort of a nice legend for Spain to tell in order to stake their claim on inventing the churro, which does happen a lot in these history sections where one country is really associated with an item. So I don't want to like call Spain out. Like, I feel like every cheese episode we do has this.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Whenever something is tied directly to a specific place, they want an origin story. And sometimes it's just people like frying things.
Yep.
But sure, yeah. The other part of the legend that I heard was that the kind of textured curl of a churro sort of resembles the sheep's horns. So
yeah.
That's why they got the name. I don't know.
Which again is a really like fun story.
Probably like, apocryphal story.
But
sure.
Fun.
But fun.
But it's also like we can't say it's not true.
Sure.
We just can't.
I wasn't
say.
There.
Yeah, exactly. but speaking of, many people do dispute the claim that churros were inspired by or copied the youtiao, because historical records and recipes for like churro-like items in Spain and the surrounding area predate the arrival of the Portuguese to China. So the popularity of fried dough products in Spain goes back to at least the 12th century, when the area was under the rule of North African Muslims. An anonymous 13th century recipe for a flour and water dough that was fried in oil and finished with a drizzle of honey was traced back to this region during their rule. So earlier than when they went to China. But it's possible this fried dough was in that area even earlier. Some Arabic sources from the 8th and 9th century mention a fried dough preparation like this, and this had led some to suggest that perhaps Arabs introduced fried dough via trade routes to the region that would become Spain as early as the 8th century. On top of that, some go further and theorize that this fried dough traveled along the Silk Road and perhaps influenced things like youtiao in China. It's so confusing. And to confuse matters even more, Lauren, some argue that the China-Portugal theory does have some merit, but it's only a piece of a very complicated puzzle. Essentially, like, all of these were steps into making the churro what it is known as today. So some suggest the basic building blocks were there, like these early fried dough were there. But the Portuguese were influenced by the Chinese in terms of frying techniques and dough shapes. They took that back. And then later, when the Portuguese brought the resulting thing, churros, to China, the Chinese were in turn influenced by that. Which, I mean, it's like, it's one of those things that makes total sense, but is very hard to put into words.
Time is a flat donut.
As it famously goes. Yes. I like that. Oh, well, during the 16th century in Europe, syringe fritters, or fritters where dough was piped through a device, which, like churros were all the rage.
Yeah. These kind of large syringes began being used in pastry kitchens around Europe to pipe out things like dough and marzipan in these pretty shapes around that time. This is also when choux pastry was being developed. That's choux, which is the French term for pastry made by mixing flour into hot water, specifically with butter and egg added. German and French recipes for syringed fritters from around the 15 to 1600s were using this type of pastry dough. A little bit later, just not really directly connected, but fun fact about flavorings, a lot of English recipes for syringed fritters called for ground almonds, lemon peel, and orange flower water.
Oh.
Just popular stuff to flavor things with. So right, simultaneous to everything that was happening with all of this fried dough business down in like what's now Portugal, Spain, throughout the rest of Europe, we were also dealing with a number of fried dough innovations or developments.
Right. And as Spain set up colonies all over the globe, they spread churros with them. And some of these places really went on to make churros their own, like Mexico. We're going to talk about that a bit more later. Towards the end of the 19th century, beginning of the 20th century, street food culture really took off in Spain, with many vendors specializing in churros, which helped popularize churros even further. Some of these spots became something akin to communal hangouts. Because many churro offerings were inexpensive, vendors who sold them attracted a wide range of customers from all types of socioeconomic backgrounds. This is also around the time the word churro first appeared in the written record. Also gives historians a headache. Yep. Brief aside, because a lot of people do enjoy churros with hot chocolate. You can see our episode on hot chocolate for more information. But the Spanish brought this stirring chocolate back from South America to Europe. And historians suspect that dipping churros into this beverage was just a natural thing for many people, especially because the hot chocolate at this time wasn't that sweet. It's pretty bitter. Mm-hmm. So, add a churro. Yeah. All right. So, I couldn't find any hard evidence on this, but I suspect in the U.S., the popularity of churros spread with increasing interest in Mexican food amongst non-Mexican Americans during the 1900s, especially after the arrival of a large number of Mexican immigrants in the 1950s. Because again, Mexico really made churros their own. Mm-hmm. I feel like a lot of people in the U.S., that's how they experienced churros, was at a Mexican restaurant. It is worth noting, though, a lot of the food at these restaurants was often not something you would see in Mexico, especially in these early days, but more an Americanized version of Mexican food. Mm-hmm. And while many of these restaurants were owned by Mexican Americans, many were decidedly not. Mm-hmm. Same for Mexican products that got introduced during this time. The history of Mexican-American restaurants is for a different episode, but I do think this played a role in popularizing the churro in the United States.
Yeah.
Another thing I suspect that I couldn't really find evidence of here, but has been documented and discussed in terms of Spain and festival culture and churros, is that since churros are relatively cheap to make and easy to carry when walking, venues like amusement parks or festivals started offering churros in the U.S., which helped them become more popular and perhaps even solidified them as a nostalgic, fond food.
Yeah, like a fun time
for
food.
Many people.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like you think, oh, I went to Disney and I had a churro or something. Mm-hmm. Which, speaking of, Disney started offering churros in the 1980s, and that has become part of Disney theme park lore. I read the whole story about how it happened. It exists. Like, people love these churros.
Okay.
Though, many argue that this is a further Americanization of the churro, maybe not even a churro. More on that in a second. And Disney is by no means the only theme park serving them. I understand Knott's Berry Farm has a really good one. It has like boysenberry filling.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. And I recently had some, yes, at Universal. okay. Taco Bell. My friend I was mm-hmm. telling you about earlier,
yep.
If he can't get a churro, he'll be like, let's just go to Taco Bell, which I know some of you are yelling at the podcast right now. But they first started offering churros in 2013. It was served with a chocolate dipping sauce. They recently introduced a frozen drink called a churro chiller. So it's like a frappuccino, but with churro.
Oh, flavoring. Okay, sure. Mm-hmm. That sounds... like a thing?
Certainly does. Listeners, let us know if you've had it.
No diss on Taco Bell or fast food in general. That noise is delicious.
Yeah. I used to love their Cinna. I read a whole history of it. I went on a deep dive mm-hmm. about like Taco Bell products to get to the truth of the churro.
Mm-hmm.
I used to love their Cinna twist.
Mm. Oh, yeah, yeah. Hm. Mm-hmm. Crunchwrap Supreme, man. I don't know.
Yeah.
Something about it. Not a sponsor.
No. No.
At any rate, my main addition to the timeline. Oh, heck. All right. So follow with me, y'all. In 2016, scientists discovered a type of marine flatworm-like animal deep in the Gulf of California. It's this simple animal that kind of resembles like a limp sock or kind of like a churro. It's about 4 inches, 10 centimeters long. I don't know. They named it Xenoturbella churro. That is, that is the species name of this creature.
I love your random... seemingly to me, random scientific notes in the history portion. That's great.
Yeah, that's great. Yep, there you go.
Well, according to Google Trends, there was a huge spike of interest in churros during the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
I think this was very specific to the US, but a part of it may have been fueled by Disney, because in April 2020, so right after everything shut down due to the pandemic, they published their churro recipe, and people were posting their attempts at making it on social media, and it just became a whole thing,
mm-hmm.
and it was one of the highest searched recipes soon after. However, as I mentioned... As with most things we end up talking about with Disney recipes on this show, many argued their recipe is not a churro, largely because it calls for butter and eggs. Some people even argue about the texture of it, that it's more like cake-like and it doesn't have the crunch on the outside.
Mm-hmm.
I think that might be down to user error, but... I don't know. I don't want to call anyone out. Others argue that while it is not the traditional preparation of churros, it's still a churro.
like a churro in spirit.
Yeah. Yeah. It was less egregious to me, and again, please don't yell at me, than like when we talked about gumbo.
Yeah.
The Disney recipe of gumbo, I should clarify.
Right. I don't remember how they mucked it up, but they really mucked that one
up.
It
was like kale. It had a bunch of things in there that
are not gumbo specifically, right? I mean, yeah. You know, like, I don't have a donut in this game, but like, again, choux pastry was being developed and used for many similar purposes in areas surrounding Churro Central at the same time that the churro was being developed. Depending on, you know, like half the recipes I see on the internet are for something with a choux type pastry. Others are like, that's kind of not a churro. It should just be flour and water and salt. But, you know, y'all tell us. And if it comes down to a personal preference of your churro texture, then I want you to have the churro that makes you happy.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. People did, as always, researching this, had many opinions.
Strong. But strong opinions.
Some of them were like, you know what? That's not my churro, but I appreciate it's your churro.
Yeah.
But definitely would love to hear from listeners on this one.
Oh, and I've not been to Spain. I really want to go to this chocolateria in Madrid and like a number of other ones. Like, I need to get a solid churro sampling.
Oh, there's so much we could get in Spain. Oh. Do you think we could get funded somehow?
Definitely write in if you can tell us about that. Heck. I think that is what we have to say about churros for now. We do have some listener mail already for you, though, and we are going to get into that as soon as we get back from one more quick break for a word from our sponsors. This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay.
And me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
Thank you for taking the light, and you're going to shine it all over the world, and it makes me really happy.
I never imagined that I would get the chance to carry this honor and help be a part of this legacy.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
Check the back seat. Check the back seat.
All right, come here.
Check the back seat.
Gets in your head, right? Good. Because every year, dozens of children are forgotten in the backseat of a car by a parent or caregiver. All never thought it could happen to them. But with changes in routines, distractions, or a sleeping child, it can happen to anyone. Parked cars get hot, fast, and can be deadly. So get it in your head.
Check the back seat.
A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
And we're back with a listener
mail.
All over the place, which is what the churro was for me.
There was a lot of gesticulation involved in that one, y'all.
Sometimes we do a topic where I'm like, this is going to take me 15 years to talk about. And then we do it and it doesn't take that long, but my brain.
Yeah.
Feels.
It took 15 years of processing to write the three sentences. That's how I feel about the science sections a lot, y'all.
So, yes.
I'm like, oh, it's just this. That's all it is. Great.
It only took me this many hours to get to the bottom of it. Yeah. Oh, this is so exciting. We have two goat messages.
Yeah.
From you listeners. And please, if you have a goat message, just send
it in. Oh, my heck. Yes.
Please send it in. Firstly, Kelsey wrote, fun goat anecdote. Growing up rural, I had a lot of contact with goats. One day, out for a walk with my mother, we crossed paths with one of our neighbor's two goats. It had escaped their enclosure and gone a-roaming.
Huh.
Now, fun fact, goats, the domestic ones at least, will often seek out the nearest leader-shaped creature they find after escaping. For this goat, that was my mother, and she was terrified, like ran away, put me, 14-year-old, between herself and this monster, and left me for dead. I, confused, approached the goat and walked it back down its driveway until the goat sighted home and its companion, the other goat, whereupon it trotted off with nary a bleat of thanks. Needless to say, my mother never lived this down. She also never explained her actions except to insist that goats are intrinsically evil.
Hmm.
I assume her strict Catholic upbringing came into it somehow. And no, goats aren't evil. They, like us, contain multitudes. But I have yet to meet a goat I didn't like. Oh, dear.
Oh, wow. Yeah. You know, sometimes you're having kind of an anxious, like a baseline anxious day, and you're just unprepared for goat.
It can be hard to be prepared for goat if you're not used to goat.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if you have a Catholic upbringing or have seen The Witch or any other film or something like that. If I saw a goat coming at me, I think I would like suss out the situation, but I would
the
be
the goat
on
vibe.
Edge.
Yeah.
I would be like, I'm ready to run if I need to.
Yeah, sure. Cautious optimism upon facing a goat. Sure. Yeah. No, I mean, I get it. You know, like I put my TV in my closet for like 2 weeks after I watched The Ring for the first time. So, so it's real. It's real. but also, oh, what buddies? Like, see, right? Like, I need to hang out with some goats, apparently.
Yeah, I think you should. I think this will improve your vampire image, but also be good. Just be good in general.
Yeah, cool. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Goals, great. Sarah wrote, longtime listener, but I'm shy. Of course, it's goats that gets me to write in. My family have raised goats for a long time now. Grandparents raised milch goats. We must have used the milk in our cereals, but I have no concrete memory of it. My uncle raises boars to supply the halal festivals local to him, and my parents had a small flock of pygmy goats. Historically, for me, goats are pets, not food. Like, you come home from work, and it's the best thing that's happened to them all day. They're yelling vegetarian dogs. But I have eaten goat once, and I'm sad to say that it's delicious. It's been 15 years, so I cannot swear I have the restaurant correct, but two friends and I had goat Rogan Josh at what is probably Tabla in Buckhead. And if I don't have it correct, Google Maps shows me that I now want it to be the right restaurant.
I want it to be the right restaurant, too.
Well, I'm sad and or glad that your goat eating experience was nice.
Yeah.
But they also, right? See, this is really enforcing that, like, goats are buddies. And, yeah, this is great.
Yeah. That sounds so nice to come home and have goats just be like.
Just be like, heck yeah, friend.
So excited to see you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, and hey, thanks for finally writing in. There's no time stamp on it, man. Like, yeah. Anytime. Yeah. Whenever the goat spirit moves you or otherwise.
Mm-hmm. Also, yeah, I see you're in Atlanta area, so hey.
Yeah.
Well, thanks to both of these listeners for writing in. Mm-hmm. If you would like to write to us, you can. Our email is hello@saverpod.com.
We are also on social media. You can find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram @SaverPod. And we do hope to hear from you. Saver is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, you can visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. Thanks, as always, to our super producers, Dylan Fagan and Andrew Howard. Thanks to you for listening, and we hope that lots more good things are coming your way. This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Discover Puerto Rico.
Puerto Rico is home to a thriving culinary scene based on products and traditions from the native Taíno, African, and Spanish peoples that have influenced it.
When you go, there are a host of restaurants, bars, breweries, distilleries, farms, and coffee houses to dig into, from five-star experiences to local favorites.
No passport required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We are the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio Season 9.
Love at first listen.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
With new segments, correspondence, and a new sound.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.